And welcome to another edition of Zoomed In. And I'm joined by Deborah Rick, the Director of Education for Northwest Public Broadcasting. First of all, Deborah, thank you for joining me.
Of course. How fun.
Speak of fun, there's actually a little bit of terror in this for me, because I realized as I sat down and I started to, you know, get ready for this, that I wore this festive sweater today. There's way too much purple in this for a good kook. I'm just saying, I want to stipulate all of this up front so that people can, you know, absorb this and then not hate me forever. But there is way too much purple in this for a good kook.
Look it just for today.
Yes, absolutely. Well, just so everybody knows, I met Deborah at the Education Summit that we held in the Tri-Cities, a month and a half ago. And Northwest Public Broadcasting had a really awesome table there with all the other folks that were there that were supporting this event, the Education Summit. And of course, I met you, Deborah, and I'm like, oh, there's a director of education. Well, duh, of course. We all know, you know, that public broadcasting has long been had education at its core. So I think within a couple minutes, I think I may have even told you at that time, hey, I need to have you on this video podcast, you know. So tell me a little bit about what you do, and then, we'll just see where it goes.
Okay, great. Yeah. So I will start by saying, like probably many people listening and watching, I grew up on PBS. I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and which is the home of Mr. Rogers. And I grew up with Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers, I was probably 8 years old before I figured out that everybody could see Mr. Rogers. I thought, like, he and I just had a thing, right? So I have long been personally a fan. My kids watched PBS growing up. And for me, it's just such a treat to be part of that legacy story for other families all throughout, you know, throughout the country and in Washington. I'm so excited. So my job is relatively new. It's a new direction for NWPB that has, you know, long been for college students, older grown up listeners, and now really spending time thinking about how we can connect to young children, young families, and people who are utilizing and love those characters like Daniel Tiger and the Wildcrats and all of these exciting properties that PBS develops and shares with us. So it's pretty exciting. So my job is to help engage the community around thinking about expanding the STEAM knowledge base of very young children. So science, technology, engineering, art, math. A lot of people think about those skills really starting when children are in, you know, like regular school, not maybe kindergarten, but certainly not before. And what we know based on, you know, brain research and experience and life and watching observation, right, is that very young children are really excited about discovering things. They're really curious and they're fully engaged. And so trying to capitalize on some of those feelings and excitement about the world around them and asking questions. If you've ever, you know, sat down with a three-year-old and they're like, but why, but why, but why? Those are science questions, right? Those are the things that, you know, PhD scientists walk around going, but why, but why? And it's a little frustrating sometimes for grownups with very young children, but it's a career for other people. So my job is to take what children may see on television and make it real through outreach events. Actually, our first outreach event for families is December 10th. This December 10th, 2022, at the Palouse Discovery Science Center. And Daniel Tiger is going to be there. And so kids can meet him. And then they can also interact with both the wonderful materials there at the Science Center, as well as additional sort of interpreted STEAM activities for young children. So when children are building and creating things at play, often there's opportunities in those play situations to ask questions with the grown-ups that are engaging with that child to help them talk about what they're doing. In addition to language development, which we all know is so, so important, that sort of basis of being engaged in their learning, it really does lay a good groundwork. And so we do events, outreach events. We also are working in collaboration with local libraries. We're also working in collaboration with national PBS properties to be able to really extend the things that kids see, because we know they're engaged with screens. That's fine. But we want to make sure that they're still actively at play in response to what they see. So I don't know. That's kind of what I do in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I said a lot of words.
Well, I certainly identified with the why. Why. My kids are past that stage. They still, mom or dad, I have a question, and we have to tell them, you don't need to tell us you have a question every time. Just ask the question. Right? They're not past that part. But I reminded my wife, hey, we're past this stage where they're asking why for everything. And she said, well, we're going to have grandkids someday too, so we'll get used to it. So, you know, and I can't help but think there is a show called Curious George.
Yeah.
Curious George. I don't know if, certainly this doesn't affect everyone, but a great percentage of us, I think at some point we lose maybe some of the wonder that we have for the world or curiosity. And we definitely need to continue to foster that. And sometimes, you know, if we use fun to help kids learn, maybe we need maybe we need these kids to help some of us adults to keep that curiosity as well.
I don't. So. Curious George is actually one of my favorites because I think it's
me too.
For children to be able to see either through books or through the programming, the things he does that they think I would never do that. Like that's so I would get in so much trouble, but I kind of want to see what happens. Like it's almost like this. Like reality TV in a skewed way for children to see what will happen. What will happen if he paints that person's bathroom? Oh my gosh. I think it's really fun for children to see that and to see a piece of consequence, but also it's not scary, right? Like it's just a really fanciful pursuit of that kind of, I wonder what would happen.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Has been one of my favorite movies, you know, for anime. I absolutely love it. Just adore
Beautiful.
It.
Yeah, good.
So just to set some landscape, I guess, for some people, you even have a WSU email address. The Northwest Public Broadcasting has a history, a legacy with Washington State University that dates way back. KWSU, of course, is a station that was it had different call letters even before KWSU, but it went way back to the early 1900s. And,
yeah.
And of course, most folks remember that Edward R. Murrow, you know, started at KWSU and Keith Jackson was on KWSU. And so Northwest Public Broadcasting owns a slew of stations that are in Washington, Idaho, Oregon. The reach actually can go a little bit into British Columbia. And there are a couple stations, TV stations, that are part of that. Because, of course, we're mentioning kids, and I'm not sure how many of them are listening to Morning Edition or All Things Considered or whatever. But
they are in the car. They are also.
and they're sponges, too. So, yep. You know, these little kids will hear that. Couple TV stations, though. We have the KWSU TV, and then I don't know the call letters offhand, but we've got the station, I think, in Richland in the Tri-Cities.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I don't know the call letters off the top of my head either.
So we all obviously need to be educated on that, too. So I'll look it up at some point here. But tell me about the difference in, you know, the easy programming that we already have, maybe it's syndicated, that we provide for people through TV versus like, how do we educate, you know, kids through some of these radio programs? And, does your role as a director of education extend to adults, or is it mostly focused on kids in this STEAM work?
Yeah. So just to start, My role currently is focused on children age 2 to 8, really the PBS Kids sweet spot. Other stations across the country, directors of education often play roles in other arenas as well. But a good example of sort of how the programming teaches is when COVID first shut everything down. I, at the time, was working in Pennsylvania. I was working with our Department of Education here because so many kids lacked connectivity to be able to do online learning. And for the first few months, a lot of what we were doing in some of those districts were utilizing our programs, pulling out pieces that made sense based on what they were planning to do curriculum wise. And the difference really between like PBS kids programming and like, you know, I don't want to call out any of the other ones, but like or a Disney, PBS Kids really does start with the educational components and then how do we make those entertaining? Whereas the other producers really do think about like, how is this entertaining and can we make it educational? And so for our piece, there wasn't a lot of transition work to be able to say, here's where this fits in your math curriculum. Here's where this program could help you in your science outreach. And it was really valuable. And it was so seamless because of the development of how PBS has long been focused on, okay, you know, we know kids are going to be looking at screens. We know that they're going to be engaging in media. How do we utilize that tool in a way that's beneficial to children and families? How can we use it as an expansive tool instead of a limiting tool? How can we create engagement in a family around it? How can we encourage co-viewing? A lot of the programs that you will see have elements in it that aren't in it for children. They're in it for the grown-up to sit down and watch. My favorite example is a Sesame Street episode where I don't know if you remember the program Sons of Anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Super child appropriate. Not appropriate for children. But Sesame Street did a spoof on it called the Sons of Poetry. And it was a motorcycle gang of Muppets that rhymed. And the way that it was packaged so that a grown-up walking by would be like, whoa, wait, what is happening? And it was funny enough for the grown-ups, but also so interesting for the children who missed the whole connection to Sons of Anarchy, but certainly got the, oh, I see, these words all sound the same. So that's, I get that. That word family is really interesting. I think it's just genius, the idea of encouraging that co-viewing, which is really ideal to have the grown-up with the child watching a program so the child can ask questions and can sort of think through all the things that they're seeing. And Northwest Public Broadcasting has done it for a long time. This is our 100th birthday this year. 100 years. That's crazy long. And again, the biggest part of Northwest Public Broadcasting has long been our radio. About 80% of the state of Washington is touched by our broadcasts, and that's amazing and unifying and really exciting. But yeah, we're really looking at figuring out how to use all those resources to engage children and families. So it's pretty exciting.
In terms of engaging, I mean, there's just so much vying for everybody's attention.
True.
You know, including kids and including other programming. I mean, they will be drawn to things that are exciting and not educational.
Of course.
Or exciting and maybe educational, but it's the secondary, right? The afterthought. Mm. I mean, what is the most difficult part for you in your job in trying to do that?
Well, I think that families are really busy. I mean, I think that is by far
it's true.
One of the... Captain Obvious statements made today, but I think that it's really difficult for families to to be able to pause because there's so much happening in their children's lives, in their lives, at work, home. And that is why it is one of my favorite things to do these in-person free family events, because it really does encourage that pause. And to me, characters really act as education magnets. Families may not come out. If I would say to a family, hey, you can come from 9 to 11 in the morning and you can learn about STEM with your child, they may be like, yeah, okay, it's December 10th. It's freezing. I don't know that I want to drag everybody out to do that, but I really want a picture of Daniel Tiger with my child. And that character really acts as the pull, right? It really acts as the engagement part that helps us to connect, all that sort of fun and learning and play, and taking that pause for play and helping to, I think sometimes families get really anxious about readiness, with especially with this age group. Like, are they going to be ready for school? Are they going to read on time? Are they going to all these, I feel like can be really interpreted as pressure on how we enjoy the journey of our children's growing up, because we want them to do well. We want them to be happy and safe and do well in school and all the things. But I love those moments where we can just pause and we're just blowing bubbles, or we're laughing and, you know, we're taking balloons and taping them to matchbox cars and blowing them up and watching them move and talking about why that happens. And be able to give those materials to families so they can play in that way. And the mess is our mess. It's not their mess to clean up at home. And then they can leave. We are, for this event and many events, give books and resources for families to take home to keep playing together. And I love that. This particular event, kids will get two books, same title, one book for them, both bilingual, one book for them, and one for them to give to a friend, because it's really empowering for young children to support and care for others. We just don't often have a lot of good ways for them to do that, because it's real tricky for a three-year-old, you know, to like volunteer somewhere. But here is a way that they can give something to a friend and feel that, what that feels like, but also without having, we know, just who they are developmentally, is that it's often hard to give away something you love. So you still get to keep the thing you love, and you can also give one away, which is, I think that's just great fun.
I think that's maybe the neatest thing that I've heard in our conversation, actually. That kind of warms my heart, you know, because kids, on one hand, you know, they don't necessarily always want to share. That's a lesson that they have to learn.
Okay.
But on the other hand, they sometimes feel really good, you know, to give something to somebody else. And what better than a book that then the parents are going to have to read with them. So that's good. And that's pretty active, as opposed to even passive viewing of something.
Yeah. So I will just say that I worked a long time, like about 15 years in childcare, in early education, in a childcare center as a director. And you know, we were really careful that media was, you know, not used a lot, was used so sparingly. And I think that's fine. I just think it's really short-sighted to say we're just going to keep kids away from it. They are going to engage on screen. We're that generation, this current generation of young kids, the future, they will be in learning and engaging in media. It's just true. They will do it their whole schooling. If we can really set a tone for them very young, that you are never a passive viewer, that no matter what, if you are watching the news, you need to be checking your sources. If you are, you know, watching a television program, you should ask questions about the things that you see. And that kind of active engagement, that translates as skills as a learner for life. And, you know, I don't think that's overestimating the impact that we can have when we prepare young children to have high expectations of the media that they consume. It would be great if adults had the same same expectation.
I guarantee, though, that some adults are watching this zoomed in and they're saying, we know why Deborah Rick is on here, but why is this the guy who's doing the interviewing? So that... That question, it's probably because of the purple sweater.
Can't you so, that out you know, later? Like, can't you like...
I know. Can I go in and post something and change it to a crimson, you know? So, yeah. Well, once that confirmation bias is there, you know, so they don't want to deal with me anymore. What has been the... I sense actually that, you know, because of the way you you talked about some of the experiences that you've had seeing the kids and the joy in what they're learning. But is there something that just stands out in your mind, an experience that you're just never going to forget?
For sure. There have been opportunities for us to distribute and share books to children who have never received books before. And my favorite story... there was a little girl, we gave her her book, and she rocked that book like a baby doll. Like, she held it in her arms and she rocked it. And when it was time, for the experience to end, she went to give it back to me. And I said, no, that's like yours. We do a book plate in the front of a book. We have pens and crayons and pencils for children to be able to write their name, so that in the front of their book, on their book plate, we talk about, you know, where you can write and where you cannot. But it's such a wonderful experience for them to actually put their name in it, or have their grown up put their name in it. And that little girl, when I gave it back to her, she said, I'm the luckiest girl. And for me, that little girl's little face will always be sort of right in the front of what I'm doing, because I mean, I grew up, my very first book that I ever received, and we did not have a lot of money when I was growing up, was from a librarian. We had checked this book called Marvin K. Mooney, Will You Please Go Now by Dr. Seuss. We had checked it out so many times from the library that the librarian said, just take it home. And I still have it. It was, I think for my family, it was like, oh, this is, we can do this. We can have these books at home. And I still have shelves of my children's books, right? I have twins who are 17 and a daughter who's a junior in college. And, you know, I still have them because there are as many memories probably for them with those books as there are for me reading those books with them. And it's really wonderful. And lots of times I've had children come to an event, with their younger siblings. So like an older child, maybe 9 or 10, who said, you know, is just annoyed on their way in because, you know, the 3-year-old's like, Daniel Tiger. And the older sibling's like, oh man, this stinks. But to see that and also be like, okay, that was okay. That was pretty fun. Just because of the way we craft activities, that they're very open-ended. And that's, you know, as much for younger children who, you know, have a variety of skills at different ages, as it is for older kids who, you know, are often coming along because they have to. We want there to be fun things for them too. And it's a great time. I love the idea that children do not understand that they have acquired like content, like they have acquired knowledge. They just think that was so fun. That was really fun. And I love the model that is for grownups that helps sort of take that pressure that they are learning when they're playing. And perhaps, you know, as a grownup, instead of worrying, or in addition to worrying about, you know, if we're flashcarding or you know, drill and practicing things, if we're playing and we're talking to children as we're playing together, they're acquiring great skills, and that often is a relationship builder as well as, you know, an academic skill prepping kind of thing.
I know when our oldest son was born, he's college at this point, but we actually checked a book out of the library it was called Einstein Never Used Flashcards.
I have that book.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Do you remember those books, by the way? They're like board books, but you could like stick your finger through the little thing. And so I had a book about a worm, and I still have it. I still have it. This was one of my first books, in addition to all the Clifford the Big Red Dog books that I had, which were some of my favorites. But from when I was young, it was one of my first books, and you could see it like the worm on the apple, and then it turns into a butterfly. And
was it
anyway? You just
caterpillar.
Yes, that was it.
Carl, that's a great one.
I still have my that one from when I was a kid. It's on our bookshelf. So, just a really quick funny story. In 2019, I was interviewing some students here at WCU for an internship, and I was really impressed by this one student. I thought she was, you know, everything that we were wanting for the marketing and communications team. Turns out she was from just up the road from where I originally was from, and we started talking. And then at one point when she connects my last name, so my mom has been an early educator for years and years, has the biggest children's book library you could ever even imagine. It's all categorized and all this. Anyway, she said, "Wait, is Teacher Bobby your mom?" And I said, "Teacher Bobby's my mom." This student had been a preschool teacher or a preschool student for my mom years and years before. Like, it would have been almost 20 years before. And fast forward, and she's one of my interns.
We have a lot of those stories. A lot of those stories too. Following kids who I had in preschool. Who are now, you know, playing college basketball or things, and it's a little unsettling as to how fast time goes, but it is also just a real testament, like, how wonderful, right, that intern remembered your mom and warm relationship she had. And I think that is, for a lot of us who work with young children, it really is the model of Fred Rogers, who spoke to children with such respect, never talked down to them, but anticipated their questions and anticipated their worries and fears. And I think as adults, you know, if we can think that way, if we can remember what it felt like to be very small and have so many questions and wonderings and concerns, and really respect those in young children, it feels so different to them to have that kind of conversation with an adult. I was at a theater, Daniel Tiger does a Daniel Tiger Live show, and I was at the theater. We had a little table set up. We were giving out materials at that event, and there was a small child who came up to the table, and I said, "Are you so excited about going to the show?" And he said, "No, I'm not excited." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, I heard it gets really dark in there." And I said, "It does get really dark, but you know, I have a trick for you. If you close your eyes when it gets dark, you'll feel the light come on the stage, and you can open your eyes and you'll be able to see. It's my really special trick." And he was like, "Okay, I'll try." And I was like, "All right." And he went into the show, and there was an usher who was standing listening. And she said, "I think it's really, that's really good that you made that child think that you were listening to him." And I said, "Friend, I was listening to him." Like, I think people sometimes forget that even though their worries are not, you know, car payments and student loans and, you know, all of those things, they are so the same level of significance, the things that we worry about as adults. Young children also have concerns and fears about, and helping them to understand the world that they live in, and not sort of undervaluing or devaluing the things that they feel fear and concern and excitement and all of the things about, it really changes the nature of our relationships with them. And it helps them trust us, and it helps us understand them. And I think both are really valuable.
Yeah, and just keep providing that wonderful opportunity for them to learn and be curious and ask why. And there's no question that these are really the foundational years. They're going to end up being interested in all of these STEAM fields at a pretty high level. So,
agreed. I think that really does set them up for a lot of success and a lot of great questions as they pursue, you know, solutions for things we don't even know are problems yet.
Well, listen, Deborah, it's been wonderful it's been great talking to you. I am a supporter of Northwest Public Broadcasting anyway. I think it's wonderful programming, and I still remember a college professor ranting and raving in the Murrow College years ago when I was a student. He goes, "I just don't understand why people wouldn't want to listen all the time to Northwest Public Broadcasting because it's free and it's here and it's educational and all the class." I mean, probably half of us were listening. But I'll never forget that he was so excited about, you know, just what it offers. And I'm glad that they have you as the director of its education. And by the way, it's KTNW is the station in Richland. I had to look that up, you know, right? KTNW is the member station for PBS out of Richland. So. And doing great programming. Well, thank you, Deborah. Unless you have anything else to add, we'll end it here.
Nope.
Okay.
Appreciate it, and thanks for, you know, continuing to support Northwest Public Broadcasting as we continue to serve the community. And again, the event, if you would like to check it out, is at the Palouse Discovery Science Center on December 10th at 9 a.m.
Okay, so we'll put that in the description below the video. And then also we will add the web link for Northwest Public Broadcasting that will go over programming, member options, you know, all of the good stuff.
It will forever be an interesting funding model. Like, we provide it to you, and then we ask if you would like to help support it. But it's what we do, public media.
Absolutely. We know that. So, well, thank you so much, Deborah Rick, Director of Education for Northwest Public Broadcasting. And thank you for tuning in one more time and watching Zoomed In.